Okay, so where was I? So I think I had more or less ended with the definition of a stable log map last time. So let me just quickly review. So these are diagrams. C goes to X, goes to W, where this is a log smooth family of curves. I'm not going to write down all the adjectives I did last time. Right, we should have reduced fibers, supposed to be flat. And this diagram is in the log category, but the we have this key stability condition such that this is an ordinary stable map. Okay, and so all we're doing is we're decorating the ordinary notion of stable map with logarithmic structures in such a way that this turns into sort of a nice, well-behaved family of curves in the log world. Now, as I explained last time, here's a theorem. The moduli space of stable log maps is, I'll put in parentheses, almost an algebraic stack. It violates one of the standard axioms of algebraic stacks. I forget which one. That's not a particularly important one, so you decide, okay, we'll throw out that axiom. But it's still, it's far from being the kind of thing we really want, i.e. a Deligne-Mumford stack. And as I explained last time, there are fundamental problems there are intrinsic problems about this being at all a finite type. You just would expect infinite number of connected components even when you look at very simple maps. So this is not so good.
A stack on the category of log
schemes? No, of ordinary schemes. So in the sense that specifying a map from a scheme, ordinary scheme, into this will specify a diagram like this.
Where W is the scheme that you're mapping
from. Where W underline is the scheme you're mapping from. So
the W points of this space are all of the log structures that you could put on W together with.
That's right, yeah. So that's already sort of big.
Yeah. Is a log scheme somehow has a divisor on it?
Well, that's kind of the first approximation, but what we spent the last two lectures doing is explaining how it's not so simple. So I have to apologize because I think there's no way I can really go into the details again. Okay, so most of this talk is going to be about tropicalization. Of FS log schemes. So in trying to explain the idea behind the solution to how to get a good moduli space, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to identify certain stable log maps as being healthy ones, and we throw out the rest. And the definition of healthy is going to be in terms of tropical geometry. So you can now forget this. Right now I'm really only going to use the definition of the log scheme. And I'll talk about a tropicalization functor. So this gives a good way of thinking about the combinatorics of log schemes and log morphisms between them. So let's let X be a FS log scheme. Now, if you take any point x and x, if you're working the atoll topology, you really should choose a geometric point. Don't worry about that if you're not an atoll kind of guy. Let's define sigma sub x, or x bar, if you will. This will be just the dual. We take the stock of the ghost shape m bar at x, so that's some monoid. Because it's a fine saturated log scheme, this is a nice toric monoid. And let's map it into r greater or equal to 0. This is the with the monoid structure given by addition. So what is this? If you were thinking, if you were a toric geometer, you would know what this is, because in toric geometry, you usually start with a cone, then you dualize it and intersect with the lattice, and that's the monoid. So this is actually the cone which would give rise to this monoid via the dualizing process. Okay, so for every point in X, we have a cone associated to it. So then, we also have a way of gluing these cones together. So you have to remember we're working with a scheme here, so it makes sense for one point or one geometric point to be in the closure of another geometric point, in which case there exists a generalization map. Let me write it up here. So it goes from m bar x, x to m bar x at y. So all this map is, so these are stalks of the sheaf. So something in here is represented by a pair of an open neighborhood of x and a section of m bar over u. Now the point is that because x is in the closure of y, y is also in u. U is in the is the neighborhood of y. So we just map this to the same thing, but now viewing u as an open neighborhood of y. Now, of course, because these are stalks, there's an equivalence relation on these pairs. You can shrink u. Maybe you can shrink u so it doesn't involve x anymore. Maybe you get something. Some things might disappear. So this map might have a kernel. In fact, in general, it will have a kernel. So this then dually this gives a map sigma y to sigma x. And you can show, and essentially if you look at what this is doing in the toric case, it becomes clear, this is just an inclusion of faces. The idea is that if you can think of, let's say that X was actually a toric variety with a boundary divisor. Let's say, so e.g., affine plane. What's going on over here? Say, so there the monoid is n squared. And that's given by, well, phi x to the a, y to the b. The a, b will give you the element of n squared. Now what happens when you, so you take a section of this over here and then you generalize. Now this is the y-axis, so the only thing you care here about is once you restrict to this a smaller open set, you only care about, well, you have the invertible function phi y to the a now, that's invertible, times x to the b, so you only remember the b. So the generalization map is n squared to n. Just a, b goes, sorry, that should be, I've interchanged a and b here. That should be a, b goes to a, and that's dual to the inclusion n to n squared, 1 goes to 1, 0. Okay, so this is the basic behavior. And because all of the log structures being an FS log scheme means locally it's everything's modeled on toric varieties, this is what you get. Okay, so you have for every point on X you have a cone. Whenever you have one point specializing to another point, you have an inclusion of faces. So now what you do, you just take all these cones and you glue them together as specified by those inclusions. So now define sigma of X to be the cone complex obtained by gluing together all these cones via these inclusions of faces. Okay, so this is, you know, it sounds like we're gluing together an enormous amount, which we are, but the thing is that, you know, most things get identified. So as long as this is a reasonably well-behaved scheme, say a finite number of strata coming from the log structure, you'll just have a finite number of cones. There are a couple subtleties that I will not go into about how to keep track of this. Sometimes this can involve self-identifications of via involutions of faces, and so you have to keep track of that. It's kind of really, you have to view this as a stack in some sense, but I won't go into that.
Is this ghost shape always a constructible?
Yeah, it is. Okay. Right, so what do I want to say next? And so then the other point is this is functorial. So given a morphism fx to y, that gives you, of course, a map f flat, which goes the other way, m bar x to m bar y. Well, f star m bar y, so in particular this gives you maps for any point x and x. You get a map from m bar, well, to m bar x x from m bar y f of y, f of x, sorry, and hence you get a map f flat, well, f flat dual from sigma x to sigma f of x. So that's covariant, and in particular, we then get, by taking all these maps, putting them together, we get sigma of f is a map from sigma of x to sigma of y. And this map will have a feature that every cone in here gets mapped into some cone. Okay, so let's look at some examples. The easiest example is when you take a toric variety. So we take the toric variety with a standard log structure. Well, unsurprisingly, sigma of x is the fan for x. So, for example, let's just do this for P1 to gain some familiarity with it. So if we do this for P1, I just have an N here, an N here, and 0 elsewhere. That means that the cone associated with every point other than these two is just the 0 cone. And then I have these two rays, right? The dual of this is a ray, and the dual of this is a ray. And I'm just going to identify two copies of the ray at the origin, because the generalization map, of course, is just going to give me the inclusion of 0 into the ray. Now, the point is, of course, this is really just an abstract polyhedral complex. Right? There's no linear structure on this. It just so happens in the toric case that there is a linear structure, but you should view that as a bit of an accident. So this really just recovers the fan for x as an abstract polyhedral complex. Okay, so it's very important that we understand what this is when you have a family of log smooth curves. This is really the case I want you to understand well. So suppose C to W, let's take W to be very explicit. Let's take it to be a point along with the log structure K star plus Q, where Q is some toric monoid. So let's draw an example. Okay, so you see is some nodal curve with some mark points. And let's remember what the... So this maps to just a point with the monoid Q attached to it. And let's remember what the monoids attached over here are. So generically, we just have Q. So for example, at the generic point of every irreducible component, the stalk is just Q. That's coming from here. However, at the mark points, the stalk is Q plus N. And then at the double points, we had this funny description as a push out, as a fibered sum, Q plus N, N squared, where this depended on some map, some choice of map here. One goes to rho Q, and here was one goes to 1, 1. Okay, so those are the three types of points. So just reviewing what we discussed last time, the three types of points that live on the curve. So now we can try to understand the tropicalization of sigma of C to sigma of W just by understanding each of these points in turn. So, if X in C is not a special point, special meaning either a puncture, sorry, a mark point or a node, then M bar C X is just the same as the monoid Q, and we get sigma x is, of course, hom q into r greater or equal to 0, so that's the cone that determines the monoid q as a... and then this maps down to via, if we call this map pi, this maps by sigma of pi to sigma, well, to sigma of w. What's sigma of w? It's just the dual of the monoid q, so that's just hom q r greater or equal to 0. And this is just an equality because, of course, the morphism is supposed to take q isomorphically to q. Okay, so for every general point, we just really have one copy of the cone. In particular, all of these are going to be identified on a single component, for example, by generalization of the generic point. So really, this gives... So in particular, if we take some point, let's call it W, in sigma of W, then pi, then sigma of pi inverse of W has one point for each irreducible component of C. At least that's what it seems so far. It's actually a bit subtler, as we'll see in a minute. But for a general choice of W, this will turn out to be true. Okay, and that's just because we have each irreducible component just gives me the same cone we had down here. So image of a point here is a point here. Okay, so what if P is a marked point? P is a marked point. In that case, the corresponding cone is just our same cone we're dealing with here. Let's give this a name since it's going to be showing up over and over again. Let's call it 1 sigma. So we need to take a look at the dual of Q plus N. That's obviously sigma cross ray. And sigma of pi, what does that do? That's just dual to the inclusion of Q in Q plus N, in the obvious inclusion. So the dual of that is just the projection. You forget the ray part. So that is just the projection. Okay, so what does that tell us? It tells us that each marked point then gives us, in the inverse image of W, gives us a ray. And that ray will, of course, be attached to the vertex, the point corresponding to that, the irreducible component containing the marked point. So let me write that down. So each marked point then contributes a ray to sigma inverse of sigma pi inverse of W with endpoint corresponding to the irreducible component of C containing P. Okay, so that's the analysis at marked points. And then we finally have to analyze what's happening at nodes. This is slightly trickier. Q is a node. We have to understand what the dual of this sum is. Well, the dual of a sum is a product, so this turns into fiber product. So the dual of Q is sigma. We take fiber product over R greater or equal to 0, R greater or equal to 0 squared. So there I'm just taking the duals of each of these three monoids. And now what are the maps? The maps are transpose to the maps that I had written down over here. Okay, so this map takes a function on Q and evaluates it at row Q. So this takes, say, something, say, S in here to row Q, well, S of row Q. This map is dual to the diagonal map, so that's just sum. This just takes AB in here to A plus B in here. I want to leave this picture up for a moment. So what is this? Well, let me write it over here. Otherwise. So this is just a set of all pairs, S, AB, such that S of row Q is equal to A plus B. So you can think of this as it's some kind of cone sitting over sigma. If the map to sigma, we have this map to sigma, just given by the projection, it's surjective, and the fiber will be an interval. So in particular, so this is sigma Q. The map Q goes to Q plus N squared. This just takes Q to Q. 0, 0, that's the map here, induced map by pi, dualizes to sigma p to sigma. And this is surjective with fiber. The line segment in the first quadrant with endpoints given by, well, it's given by the fact that this has to be equal to that, so the endpoints will be S of row Q 0 and 0 S of rho Q. Okay, so you should think of picture, this is a bit hard to picture, but you picture you have sigma and then you have line segments over it of lengths determined by this element rho Q. So what does this mean? It means that a node contributes, so a node contributes a line segment in sigma of pi inverse of W of length W of rho Q. So what does length mean? It means affine length, meaning the smallest multiple of a primitive. Take the difference of the endpoints, and that's some multiple of a primitive vector. And that's the affine length. Okay, so let's put this all together. Let's do it for this example. I haven't told you what Q is. That's all right. I just choose some random Q. And let's take a look at a fiber. We're supposed to have a vertex for every irreducible component. Then for each node, we get an edge whose length is determined by what particular point in Q dual I'm taking the inverse image of. So anyway, I have a node joining these two edges, these two things that will give me an edge joining the corresponding vertices. I have a self node here that corresponds to an edge like that. We can identify two different faces of the same cone. Then I have these marked points. I have a marked point on this irreducible component that's supposed to give me a unbounded edge. And then a marked point here gives me a unbounded edge. Okay, so that's what we get. So hopefully some of you will recognize this as a tropical curve, abstract tropical curve. So it's a graph. In this case, it's really the dual intersection graph of the original curve, where the marked points will correspond to unbounded edges. And the lengths of, and it's a metric graph in the sense that the edges have lengths, which will depend on the particular choice of W.
Can you articulate again what this was a picture of? Because it wasn't, not a picture of sigma of.
So this is sigma of pi inverse of a single point in sigma of W. So sigma of W, if you recall, is just the single cone sigma in this case. And as W varies, the lengths of these edges will vary. Right, so this will be of length W of rho Q. If this is, say, Q1 and Q2, this will be W of rho of Q1 and this will, of length, and this one will be of length W of rho of Q2. And you know, a priori, what can happen is for some values of W, these lengths might go to 0. That might happen at the boundary of the cone, in which case you'd actually have to contract that in. Okay, but the important point is that this formalism gives us now for free the usual notion of an abstract tropical curve. So the next step is obviously now we have this whole diagram defining a stable map, log stable map. Let's just functorial, you know, apply the tropicalization functor to the whole diagram. So let me write down the conclusion here. So thus, sigma of pi inverse of W is a tropical curve, i.e. a graph with and for our general choice of W, the graph will be the dual intersection graph. Okay, so now if we are given a stable log map, so now we have a slightly richer situation. Now we have a diagram like this, and we tropicalize this. So we have this gadget over on the left that we just spent our time studying, and then that comes along also with tropicalization of F to the tropicalization of X. So now, as you view W varying in here, the curve varies, the domain curve varies, and then you can map restrict sigma of F to the domain curve, so it's, you know, the inverse image of W, and you get a family of tropical curves mapping into sigma of X. W and sigma of W varies, this gives a family of tropical curves mapping into sigma of X. Okay, so let's now, I want to continue the analysis. Let's try to understand what's going on there. So let's use the following shorthand. So if X is a point in curve C, write P sub X is the top of the sheaf M bar X at the of X. Okay, so now I'm going to draw the same picture. So let me start over again over here with that picture. Let's see what kind of information is now hiding the morphism to X. Okay, so generically, if we have a generic point, eta, of this curve, so in other words, the generic point of point whose closure is this irreducible component, I'm going to get a map from p eta to q. Right? So that's part of the structure that's included in the log morphism. We have a map from m bar x, this is stalk of m bar x at the image of eta, to M bar C, which is has stalk Q there. So we get a map from P eta to Q. And similarly, here we have a point of form Q plus N. That's going to give us a map from P, so P to Q plus N. And then over at these points, we have things like Q plus N and squared, and we're going to get a map P sub Q. Okay, so what does this tell us? Well, let's just look to see. So this tropical curve, let's look at sigma of pi inverse of W. The tropical curve has a vertex, which is really an element of Q dual, and that will then map to P eta dual. Okay, so each vertex... let me write a vertex as by indexing it by the corresponding generic point. So V eta in sigma pi inverse of W. Let me give this a name. Let me call this gamma W. So V eta corresponds to irreducible component given by the closure of eta. Maps to the cone of sigma of x given by p eta r greater or equal to 0. Okay, so I'm just dualizing this map. Choosing the point W means we're choosing a point in the dual. That maps to some point in the dual here. Okay, so that's the what's happening at the generic points. So at marked points, we get something similar. So 2 at marked points. We get a ray, r greater or equal to 0, mapping into Hom P P r greater or equal to 0. So this will map in some way. It will have some tangent vector. So let me be precise about what that tangent vector is. We have this map from here to here, and I can then project down to n. So that gives me an element of the dual cone. We're going to call that UP. So the way to interpret what's happening to one of these edges is that it's just going to be mapped. So once you dualize everything, it should hopefully become clear that one of these unbounded edges is just mapped into the corresponding cone, so PP dual, in the direction UP going out to infinity. And I don't necessarily expect you to follow the details at the moment, but this is important because this is how we're going to specify tangency conditions. So I'll do some examples, much more concrete examples, shortly.
Maybe a third of the people here know something about the scattering diagram for YD. You might think it's cool to see how it just drops out of this.
Yeah, but I can't. If I jump ahead, no one's going to fall. Let me. Develop the subjects at the proper pace, hopefully. Probably too fast anyway. So at each node, sigma of f again maps the corresponding edge of the corresponding edge of gamma to Hom PQ r greater or equal to 0. And this edge, of course, has to join the images of the vertices corresponding to the endpoints, right? So joining the images of the endpoints. Now, I'm going to be slightly hazier here, but again, so this is going to be a straight line segment. Everything inside here is linear algebra, so it has to be straight. And it has a tangent direction. You have to be a bit careful, again, about specifying the tangent vector. It might be multiple of a permanent vector. I'm going to go into the details. Just like this could actually be, and I'll return to that later, this could be a multiple of a permanent vector, too. So with tangent vector, UQ. Okay, so the thing is that this UQ doesn't vary as you vary W. It's important, and I'm not going to prove this. Requires a more sort of details than I want to give in this lecture, but important. UQ is independent of W.
You're saying that's runs in the integrality.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's essentially, well, it's a consequence of linearity of everything. So if you want in private, I can do it, but it's a little calculation. The difficulty is simply that this is slightly tricky gadget to understand, so you... I think the main point, so the fact that this might be non-primitive is really just saying that the length of the image, the affine length of the image, might be multiple of the affine length of the original curve. Okay, so why am I going through details? I mean, I already told you that...
I've actually lost it. Where's Q is the node at the moment?
Q is the node,
where's
right.
Where's UQ?
UQ is the tangent vector, so... the picture now is, so UQ is, right, so UQ is an element of HOM PQZ,
yes.
Z. Sorry, wrong country. Right, as opposed to N. And again, I don't want to go through this.
Where it comes from, okay.
Yeah, I just want to avoid this technicality because I'd waste the next 10 minutes.
Okay,
that's right. So the important point is that there are really two pieces of combinatorial data here, namely, well, I mean, there's which cones the vertices map to, and then there's this extra combinatorial data given by the UPs and the UQs, which essentially are going to tell us, what the rays do and what the edges do. So this actually allows us to write down the moduli space of all these curves. So the moduli space... such integrally defined curves. I'm become clear what I mean by integrally defined. I mean the vertices will be elements not just of these cones, but the integral points of the cones. Is the following. So it's been read as Q dual for reasons that will become apparent later. Let's just think about what we need to do to specify such a thing. We have to say where each vertex goes. So I'll write this as a collection of V eta, and I'm going to have a blank here for the moment. So leave some space here. So this is in the product over all eta of P eta dual. So when I write dual, I mean HOM into N rather than HOM into R greater than equal 0. This is HOM P eta N. That's what I mean by integrally defined. So I have to specify where each vertex goes. The other thing I need to do, I need to check this condition that the tangent vector is correct. So there's some relationship between where these vertices go whenever you have a node. And to keep track of that, as I said, what this UQ tells you is how much the length increases, affine length increases. And to keep track of that, I need to keep track of the lengths of the edges of the domain. So I'm going to have for every node, I'm going to have a copy of N, which will indicate the length of the domain. And then this will be subject to the constraint so here we have a bunch of numbers, EQ. So think of that as the length of the curve. So what's the constraint? The constraint is that any components that intersect at a node, V eta 1, the difference between the images of two such nodes, so for eta 1, eta 2, generic points corresponding to the branches containing Q. This should be EQ times the tangent vector UQ. There's implied orientation here. I don't want to go into details. You have to choose some ordering. and reversing the ordering of E1, E2, and E2 will change the sign for UQ. So UQ is the tangent vector going from one vertex to the other. Okay, so this is saying all we need to do to specify one of these tropical curves is to specify where the vertices go subject to a single constraint node, that the edge joining that should be what we think it should be. This is the Monjoy space of tropical curves. If you take the corresponding cone over R, you get all. So the Monjoy space of tropical curves of given type.
And you put the dual, this is going to be kind of like the dual of the thing on the bottom.
That's right, yeah. Okay, so now I'm ready to define the types, the stable log maps we like.
Wait, so, I've lost track of what capital Q was at this point.
So sorry. Yeah, I'm being a bit sloppy here. Let me give this a name. Different name. Q basic. This is the definition of Q basic dual.
Okay. You're not asserting that something that we already talked about
is that. That's right, yeah. No, it's my fault there. So then we define Q basic, of course, to be the dual of the dual. Q basic dual N. Okay, so.
Were you fixing the data in
UQ? Yeah, so here the type, and again, I put this in quotes, so this means the UPs, UQs, and which points, what the P etas are, essentially. So we don't want to, we're considering a single curve, so the etas, P etas don't change. And the P etas. That's really the type. We allow the domain curve to vary in the sense that the lengths vary. And then this is really the punchline, so I think I can erase this. This is a bit too abstract anyway. So this is maybe not entirely accurate definition, but more or less it's the correct definition. So C to W equals spec kappa K star cross Q is basic if Q is isomorphic to Q basic. Now, I'm being slightly sloppy. Really, I just want to wave my hands at this. To really what I mean is there's actually a canonical map from Q basic to Q for any choice of Q. And that's because Q dual parameterizes some tropical curves. This should really be written down properly. Okay, so the point is, so if the canonical map Q dual to Q basic dual. So what's this canonical map? A point here parameterizes a tropical curve, gives you a tropical curve. Map it to the corresponding universal curve in our universal family. This should be an isomorphism.
Yeah, that's your sigma cube, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, Q dual.
Yeah. Yeah, but this should be at the integral level. Going to the reals is just kind of a crutch to fit with the way you traditionally think about mirosymmetry. Tropical geometry, not mirosymmetry. Okay, so then an arbitrary, of course I am. this all depends on the map F too. A stable log map C to X to W for arbitrary W is basic if the every geometric fiber is basic. Okay, so it's just a pointwise condition you need to check. Okay, so the way I think about this is something's basic if the family of tropical curves it gives you is universal. I meant to overline it.
Oh, okay.
Thanks. Just the geometric point. Okay, so what do we get out of this?
Presumably, we said this last time. What should I have in mind as an example? What's an interesting cue to take?
It could be anything. I mean, it could be big. And I think, I want to spend a lot of time, which will not be the next 6 minutes, doing examples where I want to... I mean, this whole looks very abstract, but it's really very concrete once you start thinking tropically. A cue... I'll give you examples where Q is fairly big. So here's some theorems. First of all, this universality at the tropical level gives you universality at the log level. So C, X to W is a stable log map, then there exists a basic stable log map, write a C basic from CB to X to WB, with WB underscore equal to W, and a Cartesian diagram C, C, B, W, B, W. Okay, so this is doing nothing at the scheme level because at the scheme level this is the identity. What we're doing is saying that, well, actually...
It's kind of amazing. So that you can put a log structure on the base so that there's sort of like no other curve, it couldn't possibly deform any further. Isn't that what you're sort of saying? I mean, there are no... you've got the C over W. You're going to make that...
Right, well, so the thing is, I mean, the way to think about it is, we know what the moduli space is supposed to be. So we construct a log structure on this which has the full moduli space.
Yeah.
And then you get a well-defined map. It's really this map, this canonical map here.
Yeah.
Which if you sort of think about functoriality, because that's duals, that really is going from there to there. So the idea is that we write down the right M bar here and we get a map, and then you have to lift it, the log structures.
Yeah.
So, really, it's just saying that any family of tropical curves can be pulled back from the universal family.
Oh, I see. The universality is only sort of at a point anyway.
Right. Yeah. So you have to, of course, assemble this.
Yeah. It's not like it could slide off.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, of course, and then you have commutativity there. Okay. So this is what solves the problem. I mean, this is... philosophically, from the point of view of geometry, this might be a bit subtle. What it means is, yes, the stack of all stable log maps is bad, but if instead we allow ourselves to do sort of pull back in the log category, life gets better and we can just focus on basic ones. Okay, so then, so that's the first theorem. And the second theorem is that the moduli stack of basic stable log maps is a lean Mumford stack. Okay, so all the problems we had go away, and
so a map of W in is a basic structure on W.
That's right. Yeah. So when you map into the scheme W into the stack, you're going to get a basic log structure on W with a morphism. Okay, so if X is proper and we fix the curve type and genus number of marked points, and also these UPs I referred to, which are sort of extra data. I don't think I'll have time this time, but next time I'll focus on examples and explain how the UP encodes tangency data in more detail. If you fix tangency data, you fix the curve class, like an element of H lower 2 of X. So that's an element of H lower 2x z. You fix the genus, the number of marked points, tangency conditions, then this DM stack is proper. I need to, obviously I need to fix something, at least the genus and the curve class, otherwise it's not finite type of infinite number of connected components. And for if X is also log smooth, stack carries a virtual fundamental class. So I should probably give attribution, because I've been talking about names for a couple of days, for these various theorems. So there have essentially been two teams working on this theory, myself and Baron Siebert on one hand, and Dan Abramovich and his students. So this was proved by both myself and Siebert, so GS, and also Dan's student, Lei Chen, and also a paper of Abramovich and Chen. This is also both of us, so GSAC. This is a combination of GS. We didn't actually succeed in proving this completely. We proved it subject to some hypotheses. And then there's a much more recent paper of Abramovich, Chen, Marcus, and Wise, which showed how to use the we proved to the special case we proved to do the general case. And then this was just, I think the only source for this is my paper with Berendt. So those were, this was the initial goal in the theory. So I think that's a good stopping place. What I want to do next time, I want to go through a whole bunch of examples to try to develop some feeling. I mean, I want to convince you that actually, even though this looks like, I want to convince you that it's actually all very clean and neat. And I'll try to explain why, how we're going to use this to attack some of the original problems using gluing formulas, degeneration formulas. And maybe I'll talk about scattering diagrams if Sean wants me to. We'll see.
No, I was just thinking if your thing was stuck inside it, you did a good job.
No, I think that would have been a bit of much of a sidetrack for this talk, but maybe next time.
Q-basic is not
So that's a good question. So no, it's not in general. But let me give you a very explicit example. If we take X to be a point, the stack we're looking at, stable, it has to be stable to a point. So we have M, G, N bar. This does come along with a boundary device, or simply the where the curve degenerates. And the basic log structure on this is indeed precisely the one given by this divisor. But it has a very simple interpretation tropically. So when you tropicalize a curve, you have each node has an edge which has a length. And all the monoid is doing is measuring the lengths of all the edges. So if you just have one node, you're just in a codimension one stratum. So you have this log structure, you'll just be in. Let's say you have degeneration. Here's the boundary. Generically, you have an N. You're just picking up one node. N measures the length of that node. If you look here, you have two nodes, and the N squared will measure the lengths of the two nodes. So in that formula I had written down for Q basic dual, there's no P eta, all the P eta's are zero, so you just have the N's, and there's no constraints. You just have edge. U Q's are zero, and...
you mean there are no constraints for P the mark points?
Right. Well, there's no... the UP didn't define... The mark points play no role in the definition of the basic monoid. If you look at the definition, there's a condition in each node. Right. So we have these V etas. The V etas are zero because all the P etas are zero in this case. So you only have the product of overall nodes. And the constraint says that V eta 1 minus V eta 2 is EQ UQ, mm-hmm. but V etas are 0, UQ is 0, so you have no constraint. So you just have the basic monoid just measures the length of the edges of the curve. And that's exactly what was sort of known classically meaning Fumihara Kato had shown that this log structure I just described here is the correct basic log structure for the moduli space of stable curves.
So this Q basic is like a generalization of this.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It may not be wrong.
Absolutely not. Right. Yeah.
This might be a question for next time, but I'm sort of wondering from mirror-symmetry applications, doesn't one really want to handle a case where X is log smooth only sort of generically?
This is a sore point. You mean so the kind of things that I have been looking at for many years?
Yeah. So is it possible in principle to fit that?
Yeah. So it's a sore point because this was a problem I gave a PhD student a couple of years ago, and he is now supposed to graduate in 2 months, and it seems like an extremely difficult problem which is not solved. We're trying to at least get some partial results to.
I mean, if in a Kabyau setting. Can one somehow?
I think
you're practical geometry. One might hope to the curves isolated. The good luck they don't hit the bad points.
But they do. I mean, the point is, say, in a toric varieties don't have too many curves that don't meet the boundary. Many curves that don't meet the boundary. What we need to correct is some values. The thing that I can say at the moment is that you could resolve the singularities and you just need to find a normal crossings resolution and work with that. And that's kind of what we're planning to do, because the toric degeneration picture is probably too narrow one. It was a good situation.
But you could do like mirror symmetry of a Fano with an anti-canonical divisor or something.
Right, there are cases.
Yeah, or I mean, most, you know, K trees or collect.
Well, you have to be careful. I mean, you you don't have a minimal model which is non-singular unless some conditions are satisfied. I mean, algebraically.
I mean, the Dolgachev family is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you need to do.
Well, I mean, that's if you're doing mirror to something, card number one. But in general, if you take a maximally impotent degeneration, the Kulikov model is not necessarily algebraic.
Yeah, that's true. Also, not necessarily smooth.
Isn't it smooth?
Yeah, no, you were wrong about that. Luckily, it is for these Dolgachev ones. But.
Yeah, I thought it was normal crossings. How can it not be smooth?
Talk about it's not.
Okay, well, I'll talk about it. I thought that was the theorem. So you didn't prove that? You mean that big green book is completely wrong? Is that what you're saying?
Let's let people
okay,
go.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice job.
Yeah.
Geometry seminar dinner. Technically, gadget dinner taking place with today's two speakers. So, you want a piece of that? Stick around. So I forgot what you.